This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust,
Rose,
and I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
From the Oscar-winning screenwriter of 12 Years a Slave comes television's next great groundbreaking drama.
I'm trying to find out who killed our son.
One crime will affect so many lives.
You need to be the voice for people who do not have a voice.
American Crime, series premiere Thursday, March 5th at 10, 9 central on ABC. And experience the weekly American Crime podcast hosted by Elvis Mitchell with an inside look at each episode. Subscribe now at podcastone.com/American Crime.
You're tuning in to the online broadcast network, AfterBuzz TV. Over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries and your number one source for after-show entertainment.
Johnson.
AfterBuzz TV. AfterBuzz TV, the destination for TV superfans. Producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows. Interviewing celebrities and showrunners. And bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
I can't see me loving nobody like you for all my life. Hello, everybody.
If ever we could have a song, Nando, this would be it.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Blacklist After Show here on AfterBuzz. I am your host for this week, Nando Velasquez. And you can reach me on Twitter at Nandovel, N-A-N-D-O-V-E-L. And across from me...
Just you and me.
We got a room. They've been telling us to get a room for a while.
There it is.
This week, it's our room.
What's going to happen?
It's Julia Carolee.
Hi, everybody.
And you can find her on Twitter at...
my name, Julia Carolee.
Awesome.
J-U-L-I-A-C-E-A-R-L-E-Y.
And if you're watching us, we're in Studio A today, which means we're streaming live on YouTube. They moved us up. We got rid of the extra weight.
We lost a
And they've moved us on up. But if you're tuning in live, great. Thank you so much for tuning in live. We're on YouTube streaming right now. We just tweeted out the link, and you can check out there. But chances are, if you're listening to this and it's not live, you won't be able to. So it's all good. Also, you can continue the conversation on our hashtag, ABTV Blacklist. I believe it's on the lower third. I can't see it right now. And yes, we're missing two people. We're missing Joe Braswell. We're missing Joe Sanfilippo. They have both been victimized by the deer hunter because they're big men. They fit the profile.
And we've been eating their livers.
You've been eating their livers. Before we move forward to talk about the show, let me talk about another show that's coming up, a very exciting show. And let me start by saying, hey, so Julia, so what if you had a son and what would happen if he was murdered?
Oh, God.
And your daughter arrested.
Oh, no.
And your child framed.
No.
And your other child. Awful. Your son, your daughter, and your other child. Where does the truth lie?
Tell me.
One crime will affect so many lives in a television event. It's called a television event of the year. And you know, we're making it a little dramatic, but it's actually a really good show. It's ABC's groundbreaking new TV series called American Crime. And it premieres next Thursday, March 5th, at 10... 9 Central, and it's on ABC, as I said before. The series is created by John Ridley. He is the Oscar-winning screenwriter of 12 Years a Slave, the movie that won the Oscar last year.
Brilliant.
And it stars Felicity Huffman from Desperate Housewives fame, and a fabulous actress, and Timothy Hutton, another great person, and centers around issues such as race, class, and gender politics. So be sure to check it out. It's going to be next Thursday on ABC, again, 10, 9 Central. Don't forget, you also got Blacklist on Thursday nights, too. But,
You can balance. That's what DVR is for.
You can balance it out. And then there's also a podcast starring Elvis Mitchell right after that. Go check that out, too, since you guys like podcasts. But again, just... We'd like to share the wealth, so we hope you still listen to us, too. Again, Joe and Joe not here. They're both drunk. I just like saying
Where
that. They're not.
They
no, we hope they're both okay. They're actually both got stuff going on.
Yeah.
Nothing horrible, I promise. Nothing too horrible. Just a little sick.
Yeah. Who isn't these days?
Who isn't these
we
days?
We are it.
We aren't, not yet. Knock on wood.
So far, so
let's,
good.
Let us start with this show. Okay.
Yes,
absolutely. Blacklist. So we are talking today about The Deer Hunter.
Number 93.
Number 93. Now, this is, again, I always want to know about the number of the Blacklist, what it signifies, who this person means to Red. But apparently, this person means absolutely nothing to Red, based on what we hear. This is more of an FBI case, as we see Lizzie in the opening, in a class, in a graduate studies class, going over the profile to her students and to that little creepy reporter.
When did she start teaching? When did she become that awesome?
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
That she's now teaching. She's not even a year out of the academy.
Okay. When I was a young rookie, and
let's talk about it.
No, it's stuff that I can understand. That I'm willing to let that go. I would imagine that she's qualified enough to have to, you know, to talk about a case that she's been studying. I just wonder where she has the time to really profile the Deer Hunter with everything else going on and her getting kidnapped every week and everything. So
every week.
Yeah, every single week. I have no idea. But there she is telling
us
this thing.
But she made the time to help the future, the
Absolutely.
Youth.
And she, and you know, it's a really creepy opening scene. You know, as she's talking about the profile, we're seeing more or less this Deer Hunter in the shadows going after their big prey. You know, she talks about, you know, it's patient, calm. Deer Hunter is only interested in big men, into the sport of it all, the ritual of the hunt. And then the Deer Hunter guts them, removes their organs with precision. And she calls these crimes of domination.
Yes.
And her signature, or his signature at this time, because they don't realize it's a girl, even though we see it's a woman in the shot, is carving out the liver and then taking a ceremonial bite. So that kind of had us both.
Ceremonial bite of liver.
Of liver.
Gross.
There's so much wrong with that.
Disgusting.
Let me put it this way. We cover Hannibal.
We see ceremonial bites of liver on the regular,
yeah.
But for some reason,
this one freaked
this
us
one
out.
Really made me a little crazy.
Yes, this one actually kind of got us a little bit.
Yeah,
it was a little disgusting.
I have a big fat ew on my notes. Right next to it. Ew.
Yeah, absolutely. So, what do you think about this Blacklister? Without, you know, getting to, before we get into all the twists and turns here.
Are we talking about the episode in general, or are we talking about this Blacklister?
Let's start. We didn't really talk about the episode, which
the
we usually like to do. So let's talk about the episode a little bit. What are your general impressions on
this? Okay, so generally I thought this was something of a filler episode, but in a good way.
Okay.
You know, it wasn't too deep. It wasn't too overreaching. It was just kind of fun. It was kind of gross sometimes. Mm-hmm. It had some interesting characters, an interesting Blacklister this week, kind of two morphed into one, which I thought was a really interesting twist, which, you know, we'll get to as we sort of break down the episode. I kind of liked the overall theme of reading people.
Okay.
That was going on throughout this episode.
Mm-hmm.
It started with that little speech that Red had about, you know, he's survived many a time with his ability to read, whether it was reading books or reading people, and how that's saved him multiple times. And you see how Lizzie sort of employs that throughout this episode and other people as well, reading people. So I just noticed that theme throughout. I thought that was kind of clever. And also it was an interesting comment on domestic abuse and the mental toll that it takes on people and the brink that it brings people to and what they're willing to do in order to survive. So I thought that was kind of an interesting idea. Why are you looking at me?
Very heady. It's just very, you really got deep on this,
well,
I think. I love it. I was like, wow, I don't think I got that deep on it.
I can get deep, Nando.
No, you can get deep. Look. By the way.
Nando? How
there's
long
no,
until I stab Nando?
There is no one here to protect me. No one at all.
Anyway, so, but I thought it was a fine. It was a fun episode.
It was
a fun episode.
Well, other than the fact that liver shot kind of got me a little grossed out.
Well, I like the gross stuff.
I like the gross stuff. So it, like getting shocked every now and then.
Yeah.
I thought this was a really interesting, I don't want to call him a Blacklister because I feel like Red had really no interest in this person other than to help Lizzie out.
But I mean, they're list. Is that just coincidence?
I don't know. We still haven't really figured out exactly.
We've been talking about that a little bit in the walk from the screening room to here.
Yeah, like what the numbers are. I mean, we always are trying to wonder what the significance of the numbers are. But again, this one doesn't even fit like a blacklist. This one doesn't even fit a blacklist that Red would have.
I feel like it's usually Red bringing the blacklister to the FBI.
Yeah.
And then he has some sort of investment in the capture of this blacklister. I mean, there was a means to an end in that there was sort of a bargaining chip between he and Lizzie, but
well, because of that, I kind of do feel that in a way this is a filler episode, because I don't think we will see anything in regards of the villain of the week, of the person they're going after. I don't want to call it blacklister, but in regards to this person, I don't see them coming back. Like, not the person, but I mean the storyline. I don't see, whatever the big overarching storyline is, I don't think we will hear about the Deer Hunter again. But I do love this character. I do think it was a very fascinating case.
Yes.
I did like this case. And of course, we definitely, I think we're talking about how interesting it is now that the Harbor Master case was open again too. So it was good to see that move forward. The one thing I probably have a slight problem is they tease the hell out of Tom coming back this week.
You have a problem with that.
Yeah, I know. You definitely have a problem with that.
I have a problem with that.
I just thought that was not a fair tease because we didn't really get to see Tom at all.
And it was a big tease. He's like shaving his head, shaving his beard.
Yeah.
I was ready for that.
Yeah.
No dice.
So that kind of, that's a little false advertising.
It's
we saw him in the clips, you know, previously on the blacklist.
But I don't trust them.
That doesn't count. I do not trust the show anymore. We still love the show.
Yes,
just a little bummed.
Just give me a little Tom, guys. Give me a little Tom.
But anyway, but yeah, I did like this blacklister. Amanda Plummer, I believe, was the person that played the Deer Hunter copycat, as we realized.
Yes.
You know,
I love her.
Yeah. And
I can't look at her without thinking of the opening scene in Pulp Fiction. That's just my favorite.
No, she's awesome. And you gotta love that Red and Lizzie are working together again. This time Red wants Lizzie to give him information on the Fulcrum. Lizzie's, you know, a horrible liar. A couple of horrible liars in this episode, actually. Lizzie being a horrible liar, Red not believing it, and Red being willing to help Lizzie out. And because we heard the
Red
whole...
Red reading her.
Yeah, there you go.
See? I'm getting it.
I'm hearing you.
Go ahead, sorry.
No, it's cool. I like it. I'm writing it down. Reading.
Reading.
Yes, I'm reading what I'm reading. And, yeah, so Red, anyway, wants to give Lizzie some assistance on the identity of Deer Hunter because Red feels that Lizzie read the profile wrong. And meanwhile, this way he has something, you know, he's like, if I help you here, you tell me about the Fulcrum. So Lizzie is allowing him to assist, but she's not buying any of his story.
Always a back and forth between those two.
Yeah.
Always. We've talked about this before, but it gets a little tiresome.
And on end, yeah.
Come on, to what end?
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, what's interesting about the whole thing is Red does at least open the door for them to start considering things, even if she doesn't believe Red. And it takes the Metro Crimes Diary guy, the guy taking photographs who happened to be in the classroom in the beginning of the show, too.
In her graduate seminar that she now teaches.
Yeah, I thought that was... I had to replay that scene when he first bumped into Lizzie, because he bumped into Lizzie's arm, and obviously it meant something, because I kept rewinding it, but it kept bumping in on that line that we had to rewind knots around the anus.
Knots binding the anus.
And I was a little grossed out because I kept wanting to understand the whole bump, but I kept hearing that line over and over again, and it was annoying. It was totally annoying.
What kind of knots? Like Boy Scout knots?
I don't want to...
Nautical knots?
That's not my cup of tea.
Okay. I'm just wondering. I like the kiss.
I just thought it was a very odd place for that line to be said during the bump. But anyway, so they go to the ME's office to see officers, well, the ME office to see the latest victim of the Deer Hunter, see that it's been tampered with, the sheet was taken over, and they go chasing this guy. I actually thought this guy was the original Deer Hunter the way he was talking.
You did call that.
I did call that. I was wrong. But
ladies and gentlemen, Amanda said he was wrong. Continue.
Just take a picture of me right here. You won't get that too often.
No,
actually, it's pretty
often. For all of eternity.
I have no problem being wrong. I'm just not a sore winner when I'm right. That's all. let me take your pen. And anyway, so. So anyway, you know, this strikes me really weird because here we go. We can make fun of Lizzie and the task force all we want, but they're incorrect on their information. Red says they're incorrect. And then you got this guy who works in this, you know, tabloid dirt sheet, you know, paper, mm-hmm. who says, oh yeah, it's a copycat. And all of a sudden they start realizing, oh, ding! This guy's right. Red was kind of right in the sense that, you know, Red figured I was a woman, but you know, everyone's right and Lizzie is wrong. So
who should be teaching the graduate seminar now?
Maybe the Metro Crime diary reporter guy.
Perhaps.
I don't know. But I did think that was a little odd. I did like how they figured out with the copycat.
Yeah, I was going to say, that was cool with the different circumference, I suppose, diameter of the bite marks on the livers.
The bite marks, absolutely.
Yeah, that was kind of cool. I like that twist.
It was kind of cool. As long as we didn't get to see anyone bite into it again, that's totally fine by me. But that's all good.
Can I just say that this episode was the most amazing Aram episode ever?
You know, we'll finish off on the deer hunter, but let's talk a little bit about some of the other stuff because
I'm just thinking of it because he's the one who put it together.
Yeah, he's the one who put it together too. Well, let's talk a little bit about because we got other things going on at the same time, and we'll finish off the deer hunter. But let's talk a little bit about the mystery guy on the phone because that's where we left off at the end of last week's episode. The guy that Red was talking to. Overall, I was a little bummed.
We didn't get too much out of it, did we?
We didn't get too much out of it.
I mean, the biggest thing I feel like he said is it is happening in the very, very first phone call.
Yeah.
And I was like, what? What's happening?
What's happening?
But we never...
Which was a great TV show back in the 80s or 70s.
Oh, you're so much older than me.
Anyway. I
wanted a little bit more. I also, you know, I did not expect him to be in town, and he was.
Yeah, that's pretty odd. Because his the area code, at least,
the country code was in Russia.
Yeah.
I don't know. I really felt kind of like about it.
Yeah.
There was nothing that really propelled that storyline forward too much for me. Yeah, we have the chair tipped over and a little bit of blood.
Yeah, I mean,
you can see that he sees Dembe, but
he's pissed off because Dembe picks up the phone and not Red because Red's busy handling business that we'll get into.
And that's all we really get.
So you have no idea who this guy is, and there's no clue, and other than the phone being left off, it's like, this guy could be anybody. This could be a forgotten plot point based on what we see. So I feel like that was a little bit of a...
Fell a little short this week.
It was a little bit of a letdown.
Because, I mean, it was so built up at the end of the last episode that I was expecting a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and that's really all they had to focus on. Just get that a little bit more screen time, a little bit more exposition. And
so, yeah, the only clue we really got really is from him talking with Aram, which is why I wanted to bring this up too, because this is where, you know, we're seeing definitely a little bit of a love affair with Red and Aram, but it's obvious that Red is just, you know, using his wily ways to get to Aram, to get Aram to do things for him, because, you know, Aram was kind of trying to be by the books with the phone call after Dembe got hung up on. And he said, I need a warrant. And Red's like, you don't need a warrant.
Of course I don't.
Of course he doesn't.
Of course
I don't need a warrant. I can just do this. But, you know, playing with his hair. I love the hair comment.
So there was some buttering up of Aram, which seems to be the way to his heart to get him to do things. So we comment on his hair. We call him Agent. And he says, nobody ever calls me Agent. He gets a little excited and spun up about that. We give him a special task. And then there's that look that Red gives to Navabi, Agent Navabi, as he's patting Aram on the back. And then the next thing we see is Navabi is buttering him up a little bit and saying stuff about his hair and just don't get fat, or calls him sexy.
She called him sexy.
Yeah.
And he took him back.
Oh, yeah.
But I think when Aram gave Red the address, which was, I believe, in Park Slope, which, if I remember correctly, I am a New Yorker.
You are a New Yorker. I asked you about this.
There is a large Russian population in Brooklyn. which part Slope is in. So I would think that that might lend to the theory, you know, a little bit more about him being Russian, mm-hmm. but he's in New York. So, yeah, that I believe so. And please forgive me if I'm wrong. It's been a couple of years since I've been in New York. And
it was a mobile phone. It could have the same country code.
It could have the same country code. Yeah. But I feel like Park Slope, it's interesting that it's in Park Slope. I wonder if there's another reason for it to be in Brooklyn. Most everything in the Blacklist seems to be in Manhattan anyway. Yeah. So I'm a little surprised that this was in a different borough. But it kind of does fit the profile. Anyway, yeah, but the one thing that I thought was really, really interesting, remember we went back to see it, was when Aram gave Red the address, Red was looking at Navabi, mm-hmm. who was in the side, gave a little tilt to the side of the head, if you could see me. If you're not on iTunes, you can see me tilted on the side of the head.
It's a really good tilt.
And it's a really good tilt. And Navabi, I think, gave a little recognition.
Smirk.
A little
something.
Yeah, and then Red just tapped Aram on the back, like, good job. And then just walked off. And that was before Navabi started flirting with Aram.
And buttering Aram up. Call him all sexy.
Yeah. I don't know if Aram gave the address at that point. I think it was afterwards. But anyway, that scene was very interesting to me because it really puts the whole Navabi-Aram relationship into question for me. Because I actually thought there were moments when it seemed like she was warming up to him. I'm not saying they're going to go out anytime soon, but she seemed to be warming up to him. But now I feel like it's a little more deceptive on her end.
How can you resist Aram's boyish ways?
Well, when we had him on the show, it was really hard to
resist his boyish ways.
I love him.
Dude's adorable.
He's awesome.
Love him.
I adore him. He's awesome.
Yeah.
So,
he's great.
So I'm really curious to see. That was a little moment, but I have a feeling that perhaps we will see more on the Aram Navabi thing coming up, and see that relationship with Red, because I think that's a very interesting angle right now. It seems like Red and Navabi are pulling Aram's heartstrings. Mm-hmm. His strings and his heartstrings.
His heartstrings.
Yeah, they're pulling at him a little bit.
Yes.
So I'm really curious. But he does have great hair.
Sure does.
I will say that. I definitely have concern.
P.S. You have a really nice haircut.
I know. I told Braswell I was getting a haircut this week, and he doesn't show up. I'm hurt. Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, so let's talk about the other big case that we were definitely looking into or looking forward to last week, which is the whole Harbor Master case. You know, we have Wilcox with Samuel Lesko, who is the big thug bouncer type who is with the bone in his ear that you just...
Come on.
You're infatuated with
that. I was so mad. He's under police custody. He is in transport with the correctional officers. He's under indictment and being interviewed under oath. And he still has that big friggin' bone hook thing sticking out of his ear. I feel like that's a weapon of sorts.
You know, you have a point. I didn't think of it that way, but that is kind of a weapon.
That's dangerous. When
you think?
A huge hook.
Yeah, that is kind of a weapon.
They don't even get shoelaces. Yet they give him a bone with a hook sticking out of his ear.
I know, that's pretty gross.
And dangerous.
It's pretty gross. Yes. Yeah, absolutely. So, so we have him in custody, and he's obviously... He had a bone to pick with Alesko. Oh, punny. Very punny.
Very punny to me.
Oh, boy. I see that. Anyway, so Alesko is going to rat out Lizzie for immunity, and he's not going to get immunity right away, but he's still going to do it. And Wilcox is an interesting character. Wilcox kind of reminds me of a cross between I think it's Columbo. You know, like I'm reaching back now to old TV again. You know who Columbo is? I think it's Columbo or
it's Peter Falk. Right?
Yeah, Peter Falk, and he was always like a little nebbishy, and he's always talking a little. And you know, he's the kind of
absent-minded,
like correct me if you're wrong.
Sort of played absent-minded, but is really on top of it.
Wilcox kind of has that little attitude. He's like very.
I can see it a little bit.
He's a little like low status, but you know he's thinking pretty smartly, and the way he's talking to Lizzie, he's obviously in a way that doesn't sound like he. He knows what he's talking about, but he's got all his cards lined up, and he's definitely smart. So, yeah, it was a very interesting take.
I kind of like Wilcox.
I kind of like him, too. And he was such a nice guy at the end of the show, giving that guy...
Yeah, a little personal side of him, too, not just the detective side.
Yeah, a little bit. But, you know, he's obviously on the case with Lizzie, and, you know, Lizzie's scared. Lizzie's kind of off her game, as Ressler sees. You know, it's not just the acting. She's really off her game on there. And I'm not the one that usually does that digs on Lizzie's acting, but or Megan's acting, but I did it today.
I say nothing.
I know. Okay, I'm in trouble.
say nothing.
Anyway, so so Lizzie's obviously concerned, and Red apparently has guys on the inside in the corrections office, and that was a cute little scene with him in the corrections office talking about when Alesco is being transferred.
Oh yes, with our correctional officer Edgar.
Yes, and Edgar's wife obviously knows what kind of food.
The way to Red's heart.
And
bake your way in.
And Red will take his wife if he ever leaves. Yeah. If the officer will ever leave him. Yeah, if he ever leaves you, Red will take you. So, I actually thought Red was going to go in guns a-blazing, but it was one of Red's typical awesome, like, you know, I love it. The door opens up on the truck mm-hmm. where they're transporting Alesco. And Edgar says, you got 90 seconds. And Red goes in there with a story.
As he does.
It's like 90 seconds, I got time. And he just goes off on his tangent on his story about the old friend of his who had the needed the heart valve transplant. And then it goes right into Alesco's brother needing a similar kind of treatment. So I actually thought for some reason Red was going to threaten him or bribe him. Well, he did bribe him.
Oh, he definitely bribed him.
But with something more like money. But he actually kind of he pulled at his heartstrings.
Aww.
So the killer,
another theme.
The killer pulled on liver strings, and everyone else is pulling on heartstrings. I thought that was actually a cute moment. Even with the bone in his ear, it was really, I think it was a really good acting job.
Yeah, I think he did a great job.
By Alesco, too.
The guy who plays Alesco, I apologize, I didn't have time to look up his name, but every scene he's been in from the very beginning when he was still sort of bodyguarding Tom.
Yeah.
Not bodyguarding, but bouncing.
Bouncing.
I guess.
Guarding. Guarding. Working the door. There's a red carpet. There's a little velvet rope, and he's just letting people in.
But he has a definite character. A little, like, shout out to what he's doing with his character. He really built a solid character, and you feel a little backstory to him.
Yeah.
And now he has an actual story, and I'm really liking it. I look forward to him being on screen.
Well, you know, if he is going to be on screen again, because whatever Red did worked, and he clammed up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't recall. He pulled his best, what's the name of that Seattle Seahawks guy who can't talk to the media?
Oh, God, which one? I'm going to say it wrong because I'm a Niners fan.
Yeah, never mind. It's okay.
Is it Marshawn?
But anyway, yeah. It is.
Is it Marshawn Lynch?
Yeah, it's Marshawn.
Okay.
Yeah. Just like Marshawn. I'm just here because I don't want to get fined.
It's a great question.
It's a great question. Thank you for asking. So, absolutely. So Alesco pulls his best Marshawn interview, impression. And, doesn't give any, and Wilcox has egg on his face in front of the AUSA. In front of the American attorney.
Yes.
Yeah. So, So Red saves the day. What I thought was interesting was, Lizzie
and
never told Red.
This is the phone call in order to make that happen. That's how important this was to Red to get Lizzie off the hook. He misses this very important phone call.
And that's an interesting point, considering how important the fulcrum is to mm-hmm. him. And this obviously has something to do with this end game that we still don't have any idea, but this is obviously very motivational and it's important to Red. But yet, he felt compelled to save Lizzie's hide over finding this guy and getting more information, mm-hmm. figuring out what exactly is happening.
And risking pissing this guy off, which he did.
And it's kind of, I don't know, I almost want to say it's a little bit poor judgment on his, we don't know what this thing is that Red's after, other than Fulcrum. But I would just feel like, based on other episodes, like, I feel like sometimes he's willing to sacrifice certain things, but he's not willing to sacrifice Lizzie. So it's an interesting dilemma. And when we find out exactly what it is he sacrificed, maybe it'll make more sense.
Better be good. Better be worth it.
It better be good. It better be good. We want the payoff. Yeah, absolutely. So anyway, Red ends up rescuing Lizzie. Lizzie didn't seem to know that Red was helping her out, but Red knows everything. It's got enough people on the take, so he figured it out. So that pretty much is that storyline. We'll talk about the end result of that at the very end, but let's talk a little bit more about the Deer Hunter.
Yeah.
Because I thought a fascinating character, played by Amanda Plummer, as we said. So she ended up being more of a vigilante. She was a copycat. And a vigilante helping women who had stalkers, husbands, people who were harassing them. These big men were bothering them. And we ended up finding out that Tracy Spiridakos?
Silobakin?
Oh, I should read my notes before I say names randomly.
You were kind of close.
I was
really
kind of close. Not really.
Even close.
Thank
at
you.
All, but kind of not really.
But anyway, we found out that she actually was the first victim
Well, she killed her husband.
Her husband was the original deer hunter.
Yes.
That she was married and terrorized by the original deer hunter.
Yes. So, which totally threw my whole thing about the Metro Diary guy.
It was an interesting theory. So we find out that her husband was a deer hunter, that his father was a bastard. And
so
pushed him to the brink.
Yeah.
And she found out who he was, and she wound up killing him. Mm-hmm. And in killing him, this vigilante side of her was sort of unleashed.
Yeah.
And now she felt as though she kind of had a duty. She said sort of in the very beginning, I don't like this to her, many, many cats and birds.
Many cats and birds. You know what? For some reason, that freaked me out. Because I know a lot of single ladies with lots of cats and birds. And it just makes me think, like, oh my God, what are they going to turn into when they get to this age?
No.
Oh, no. But if you have cats and birds, I apologize. But still, it was a very creepy character overall to begin with. And then it turned out she had a good side to her. But it was still, well, a vigilante side in the fact that she was protecting other women.
What I thought was really interesting when she said to Lizzie is that she didn't have a choice. It was sick and disgusting, but that's how he did it. And beyond the grave, he still pulls the strings.
Strings again. Interesting. I'm surprised we keep saying strings and readings. That's weird. But I wrote that down too. I thought that was interesting.
Scary to me. You know, that's why I was talking in the very beginning. My initial impressions is just the mental toll that domestic abuse, physical, mental, emotional, can really have on a person.
Yeah. Well, she definitely unraveled when Ressler and Lizzie were getting closer and closer, and they went to that last victim's wife, and they figured out she was lying.
They read her.
Because she was a bad liar, too. And they had her stew a little bit. And then they found out that White Haven Shelters. Yes, when they figured out White Haven Shelters. Then we got to see Tracy, the deer hunter, the wife, you know, start to freak out a little bit, talking to her birds and wondering if they're going to betray her. I really did love that speech. After she caught Lizzie, well, Lizzie getting captured again.
Someone's got to be captured every episode. I mean, it's in the formula
with
now.
With a shovel. I loved it. With a shovel.
Yeah.
That was pretty awesome, actually. Got hit with a shovel, and the victim's wife got hit with a cutting board. And
oh, looked, that big butcher block. That one looks even more painful than the shovel.
Yeah,
opinion.
Those
things
painful.
Are heavy.
I did love the scene when Lizzie starts fighting back and Tracy knocks out that weight that lifts Lizzie up. That was a pretty cool shot.
Yeah, that was cool.
Mm-hmm.
And my favorite Lizzie is when Lizzie is pretending to be someone else. It's awful to say. But when she goes kind of undercover, even for this brief moment, when she switches and reads people, panders to what they need in order for her to get what she needs.
Okay.
So when she was hanging and she switched it on, she became the abuser, you know, like her husband, like what's her name? Tracy's husband was. And got to her mentally that way and sort of made that switch on. That didn't make sense, but you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
And, so she got a little careless. So those are my favorite Lizzie moments. We've seen it many times when she goes undercover for a moment, plays a different character for a second.
Yeah, she's agitating. She was looking to agitate Tracy to making a foolish move, which she did.
Yeah.
And she was reading her at the same time. I mean, I loved her comments. It was great.
Coolest Lizzie scene of this entire episode.
Yeah, I think it was the coolest Lizzie scene I've seen in a while.
She's a little menacing, and I love it when she does this.
Yeah, and I think kudos to both Megan Boone and Amanda Plummer in that scene, because I loved the setup that Amanda Plummer did, and it really was enough for...
She plays crazy so well.
And it was enough for Megan Boone to react like that and say, you are your husband. You get kicks out of this. You know, you're not doing this to be a vigilante. You're loving it yourself.
Yeah.
You're just like your husband, which forced Tracy to attack Lizzie. And then next thing you know, Lizzie, what was really interesting was Lizzie tells Tracy, you're just like your husband. And then Tracy rushes Lizzie. Lizzie grabs her, straddles her around the neck. And then you said, you know, you
were so proud of myself for a moment, and then they flash back.
And then they flash back that it looked just like when Tom killed the harbor master, and then they flash back to Tom killing the harbor master, and it looks like Lizzie's turning into her husband in the sense that here she is trying to kill kill Tracy.
And it's a way that the abuser sort of weasels his or her way into your mindset and things that trigger you and your go-to reactions.
Yeah, it's who we become. I think it's really fascinating, especially the whole backstory of Tracy and the deer hunter, the fact that the deer hunter definitely had a father that was a bastard, that was very abusive, and even though the deer hunter himself didn't want to turn into his father, he did. Mm-hmm. And he started abusing, you know, doing his thing, and then Tracy killed him, but turned into him as well. And the cycle continues. I thought that was really, really interesting.
Thought.
It is very disturbing to think about that, but you know, it's, you know, it's just what it is in a way. And I think the fact that Reznor came in and rescued Lizzie, I guess that was meant to imply Lizzie was turning into Tom too, was starting to maybe cut corners and do her own thing, and Reznor was able to save her. But she was very troubled. In fact, I thought it was very interesting to see her in, by the police station after Wilcox was walking out. I actually thought maybe she was expecting to get turned in or to turn herself in.
Well, at that point, I think she was thinking of turning herself in, because at that point she didn't know that Red had gotten to him.
Yeah.
That he had changed his story. So as far as she knew, like, her goose was cooked.
I feel like maybe she was definitely there contemplating something. So she has a heavy heart.
Well, she said she was going to go to him. She was prepared to do it. And I think that was her sort of building up the courage. Mm-hmm. But then it was interesting how they showed him talking to the homeless man, giving him money, giving him an opportunity for shelter, and that seemed to sort of sway her in a way. I don't know, in a good way or a bad way.
Yeah, I don't know.
But I don't know why. I mean, it was nice for Wilcox's character. I just don't. I don't know what the point was yet, but we'll see more of him because he's really awesome. And
I feel like the Harbor Master case is not over because Wilcox knows at this point happened.
Yeah.
He just needs to get proof.
Absolutely.
So he's on the case.
He'll stop at nothing.
Yeah. And I think
Our little Columbo.
But I guess the big thing to come out of this episode regarding just the main storylines that we're seeing this season is Lizzie confesses to Red that she has the fulcrum.
The bunny fulcrum.
And
hashtag bunny fulcrum.
Hashtag bunny fulcrum. And Red wants to protect Lizzie, but Lizzie's still not. She tells him, but she's still not 100% trusting about him. But I think the fact now that Red knows Lizzie has the fulcrum. And again, it makes the whole mystery caller thing curious, because it just makes me wonder, like, where this guy comes back in or how he comes back in now that Red knows about the fulcrum. That he knows where the fulcrum is. So, I don't know. I believe we covered just about everything from this episode.
I think so,
right?
You guys will tell us if we didn't.
I'm sure you guys will. So I think maybe we should move. Let's talk about some predictions and figure out what this is, right?
Ooh.
Yeah, we'll do that.
And now, you're after Buzz TV.
All right, so let's do something different today, okay? We're going to go with Joe Oh, Joe's not here. Okay, we'll go with Joe. Oh, no, he's not here.
Oh.
All right, well, Julia, you're next on the list. So let's go with you.
What else is new? I'm going to be honest going in. I don't really have... This episode didn't give us too much to go on, so I really don't have that amazing, stellar prediction ideas.
We think Tom's coming back.
Well,
I don't trust them.
In regards to Tom, I'm thinking, I'll just predict it. I could be very wrong on this one, but I will say that Tom is the one who, I don't know if it's killed, but abducted the guy on the other line of the cell phone.
Okay.
Okay, so
he looks like he was abducted. Yeah, I don't know.
There's no body, so there's some blood, I'm just going to say abducted instead of killed.
There's blood, it's the chair's overturned. So, I mean, in that sense, I guess he could come back in some kind of way.
So I'm going to say Tom is the one who intervened and abducted this mystery guy on the other side of the phone.
That's actually a really good... You're like, I have no predictions. But then you slam with something like that.
You're being so nice to me tonight, man. Because there's no one to protect you. I also think that we're going to maybe delve a little bit more into what the relationship is between Red and Navabi.
Okay.
You know, because they gave a very particular aside look to each other.
Yeah,
They're working a ROM together, it feels like, a little bit. Like, they have a common interest somewhere along the lines. And let's not forget, he's the one that brought her into this task force.
Yeah.
And she's always on his side. Remember, he gifted her that guy who killed her brother? Mm-hmm. I think... it's time to just sort of flush out that relationship a little bit more.
Yeah, I do feel like, I think it's about time that we see what the game that's being played between Aram, Red, and Navavi and see what this relationship really is and see, you know, let's get something, like at least some honesty going on here as to what's going on with this relationship.
Because we're always rooting for, because we love Navavi. She's amazing. We're always rooting for her, but I sort of forget what her place is there.
Well, we love both characters. We love, in this case, we love Navavi and we love Aram. Oh. We totally love Aram. And, you know, we obviously want to see, you know, we want to see a lot more of these fun scenes between the two of them. I'm not sure, you know, what's going to come up next. But I'm really curious now. I loved Red playing with Aram too. That was really fun too. So I want to see more Aram.
I also predict that somebody on the task force will be kidnapped next season. Their next episode. Every episode.
Well, for those of you who do not like looking at scenes for next week, I mean, someone does get kidnapped or captured.
Oh, do they?
Yes, they do. But it's not the task force. You don't remember.
Yeah, I don't remember.
You're great with predictions, but you can't remember when you see stuff on the show. I love how you made a prediction, but it's something that kind of happened in scenes for next week, and you're like, okay.
Let's write it down. You'll tell me later.
Well, you know, here's just tune out for 10, 15 seconds if you don't like to see scenes from next week.
Who gets kidnapped?
Red.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. All right. Fair enough.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Before we end, there's one other thing I just want to bring up, another question I want to ask you, because I think it fits in with predictions. Huh. So one of the last things that we heard Red say to Lizzie is that Lizzie doesn't want to give Red the fulcrum because she's afraid that once she does, Red is going to dispose of her. And she doesn't want Red to disappear.
She will be of no use to him, and she'll be afraid that she'll never see him again.
Yeah. So what do you think about that theory, about that line?
I think he's her father. No, I don't. Still don't. Still don't.
Yes, you do.
I mean, it's a theme we've been talking about throughout this entire episode. Is people reading between the lines
and reading and wrong reading or whatever
their characters and their demeanor. And there's such a back and forth always. Mm-hmm. I mean, we talk about it all the time. There's such like the I love you, I hate you, I love you, I hate you. Help me, don't help me. But she's sort of the one. He's sort of the one constant to her.
Yeah.
He's the one that keeps things interesting for her. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of truth to that statement.
Well, I think I do agree with the truth that there's always that little push-pull, that little tension. It doesn't have to be sexual necessarily, but there's that tension between the two of them. It's like, I love you, I hate you, I love you, I hate you. You know, I want to work with you.
Stop
you
helping disgust me. Help me. Stop helping me. Help
yeah,
me.
Exactly. Or even the thing with you and me.
I hate you, I love you, I hate you, I love you.
Exactly. So there is something to be said for that. So I could see that being, you know, that making sense. But I thought
she's he's sort of the only family she has.
Family.
Or any...
with the air quotes.
Ties that she has to her past.
Yeah.
So she doesn't want to lose that.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think there's a lot of truth in that statement.
Okay. Well, I'm really
what
curious.
Do you think?
I think I just love that statement because I thought it was a really good dig to Lizzie. You know, like Lizzie's like, oh, wow, really? You know, like I'm sure Lizzie's just like rolling her eyes at that. But at the same time, there is some truth there.
Oh, yeah.
Because she doesn't trust Red. And obviously the best way to probably get rid of Red is to just give him the fulcrum.
I feel like she does trust Red.
Yeah, but she does trust Red. But
she pretends not to.
Yeah, exactly.
Like she forgets that he's a criminal.
Exactly. But if she gave him the fulcrum and if that theory was true, Red would just disappear and leave her alone.
Yeah.
But we know that's not going to happen because Red seems to be too protective of her.
Well, yeah.
You know, we know as an audience, she doesn't know that. I don't think she still figures it out. But
because
anyway.
He's her father. No, he's not.
You're just covering your butt by saying both.
Never.
Guys, I believe that's about it for us.
Wait, what's your prediction?
Oh, what's my prediction?
Yeah.
Oh, God, do I have a prediction?
Come on, Holmes, what you got?
I predict Tom's coming back next week.
Son of...
I'm terrible. You know, honestly, I'm terrible at predictions, and I love ragging you on prediction because you want to be right so bad. I really don't care. I don't care what I predict. I'll predict whatever.
Okay.
No, I don't.
All right.
The only one I care about is the following. When Weston becomes a follower, then I'll be really happy. That's the only one I care about.
He became a follower in last episode of the Blacklist, remember?
Yeah, exactly. So there we go. I can't think of what to predict. I like the fact that Red, I want to see more of Nababi, and I really love the one you said. Honestly, I hate to admit it, but I really love the one you said about
you
Tom
just
kidnapping.
In kindness tonight.
I know it pains me. It pains me, but I really, it's the only way we could see this guy again is if it's someone we know that abducted him. So that's why I think it makes sense that it's Tom.
Thanks, Nando.
So, congratulations.
You heard it here, folks.
You heard it here first. Absolutely. Guys, please rate us and comment on iTunes. We'd love to see some more new comments. I know we don't have the full crew here this week, but hopefully we held up the fort, the two of us.
I hope so.
With our sexual tension.
Oh, God.
But in the meantime, and continue the conversation on our hashtag, which is ABTV, ABTV Blacklist.
Know the
in there. And and you can reach Joe K. Braswell at Joe K. Braswell
on Twitter
and Joe Sanfilippo at Joe Flippo. Mm-hmm. Where can we follow you and reach you?
Instagram and Twitter with my name, Julia Carely. Like I said before, JULIACEARLEY.
Okay.
And you, Nando.
And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Nandovel. That's NANDOVEL. You can also find me here on AfterBuzz for a bunch of other shows.
A bevy of shows.
We're doing The Walking Dead. I'm doing Scorpion. Just started doing Survivor. Very, very excited about that. And me and the Joes are going to be doing Bates Motel coming next week. And,
I'm not in that gang.
And you know what? It's kind of official.
No girls allowed.
I'm kind of official. I'm the only one from the group, but I'm jumping back in the following. Because I'm a glutton for punishment.
Well, I will tune in and hear what you guys have to say and keep my comments to myself and off the air.
Yes. So anyway, thank you so much for tuning in. Tune in next week. Well, we hopefully have a full panel and we'll talk more Blacklist. Goodbye.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.